Iran imposes sanctions on several Canadian individuals and an entity over their support for anti-Iran terrorist groups and inciting violence in the country. The Palestinian president urges Arab leaders to boost their support for the people of Palestine in the face of Israeli crimes. And the Russian president says Moscow may quit the Ukraine grain delivery deal again if Kiev violates security guarantees it has given to Moscow. Welcome to World News, live from the Iranian capital, Tehran. Thank you for joining us. Our top story, Iran says it has imposed sanctions on a number of Canadian individuals and an entity over their support for terrorist groups and inciting violence against Iranians. The foreign ministry said the sanctioned individuals and the entity have supported the anti-Iran MKO terrorist group and spread false information about the country. It said they also played a key role in imposing brutal sanctions on the Iranian people. The sanctions list includes Canada's National Defense Minister, the Chief Justice, the Chief of the Defense Staff, and the commanders of the Canadian Air Force and Navy. The National Post newspaper has also been blacklisted because of its anti-Iran positions. A ban on issuing visas and entry into Iran, as well as the seizure of their properties within the Islamic Republic's territory, are among the punishments considered for the sanctioned individuals and the entity. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution says the 1979 takeover of the U.S. Embassy in Tehran proved that Washington is completely vulnerable. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei added that the rise to power of the current and previous U.S. presidents is a sign of America's decline. He added that U.S. miscalculations during its invasion of Afghanistan and Iraq also exposed its vulnerability. Elsewhere in his remarks, Ayatollah Khamenei noted that the history of confrontation between Iran and the U.S. dates back to the CIA-orchestrated coup in Iran in 1953. But now, he said, American politicians are hypocritically and shamelessly claiming they are supporters of the Iranian people. Iran's leader also referred to the U.S. assassination of General Qasem Soleimani, saying the Iranian nation would never forget the killing of their anti-terror icon and would take action in a suitable time. Ayatollah Khamenei also pointed to the recent riots in the country and called them a, quote, hybrid war. He said a recent intelligence report showed how the enemies had been planning to instigate chaos across different Iranian cities using all means. He noted that the Iranian nation, however, made those plots futile through vigilance. Journalist and political commentator from London, Sayyid Mohsen Abbas, tells us why Iran's leader has pointed to the 1953 coup in Iran in his latest remarks.
So when Ayatollah Khamenei talks about that particular coup, not only is it a reminder for the Islamic Republic of Iran's own citizens that actually those who mistakenly perhaps still believe that the American dream is the Iranian dream, perhaps need to review some of their own history and to look at what were the results of that 1953 coup. First of all, 26 years of authoritarian dictatorial rule was one outlet. The other was that all of the Iranian oil industry fell into the hands of the British and Americans. Essentially, they plundered Iranian oil wealth for those decades. You saw a huge reduction of people's freedoms and other liberties. People's economic welfare was very much suppressed as well at that time. And what did the Americans get out of it? Well, they say they got the Soviet Union to not get into Iran and the oil, etc., as I pointed out. But in reality, it's important for people to remember their history, because those who forget their past cannot possibly make sense of their present.
And Iran once again says it is determined to achieve a good, strong and durable agreement to revive the 2015 deal known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, or the JCPOA. Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian made the remarks in a phone call with the European Union's foreign policy chief, Josep Borrell. He said Iran has relayed its views with a constructive and forward-looking approach to the American side. Amir Abdullahian added that Iran and the International Atomic Energy Agency are also reaching an agreement to continue their, quote, strong cooperation. Borrell, for his part, said the EU would continue its constructive efforts until a final agreement on the revival of the JCPOA is achieved. He also hailed the agreement between Iran and the IAEA for the continuation of their cooperation. Elsewhere, Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas has urged the Arab leaders to boost their support for Palestinians in the face of Israeli crimes. Abbas made the remark while addressing the first Arab League summit in the Algerian capital. He added that Israel is systematically throwing away all agreements it has signed. Abbas called on Arab leaders to protect the Al-Aqsa Mosque and the Church of the Holy Sepulchre in the face of Israel's Judaization plans. He also called for a legal committee to be set up to follow up on the crimes committed against Palestinians as a result of the British government's issuance of the Balfour Declaration in 1917. The declaration, which was issued in the final years of World War I, led to the establishment of Israel on Palestinian soil. Former Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has bragged about his party's performance in the parliamentary election. Initial results show his party and its right-wing allies have won just enough seats to command a narrow majority in the Knesset. We discussed the issue earlier in our news review program.
It's time now for the news review of this bulletin. Israel's former prime minister is boasting of a big victory as his party and its right-wing allies win just enough seats to form a narrow majority in parliament.
Final results, but one thing is already clear. Our way, the way of Likud, proved itself. I remind you that after getting 52 seats last election, we are on the brink of a very big win.
Netanyahu has thanked voters for their confidence. His bloc of four parties has taken 62 of the Knesset's 120 seats. His main opponent, Prime Minister Yair Lapid, though, is insisting that the race is not over yet. He says nothing is final until the last envelope is counted. The final result could swing as votes are being tallied and is not expected until later in the week. For years, Netanyahu has been involved in a massive corruption scandal. He's been indicted on multiple bribery and fraud charges, but he denies them all. Reacting to the election results, the Palestinian Prime Minister Mohammed Shataya has said Netanyahu's comeback shows extremism and racism are growing in the Israeli society. Joining us from Occupied Ramallah is Mona Kandil, and also we have for an analysis Elijah Magnier, who's a journalist and political analyst, joining us from Brussels. All right, Mona, first over to you. It's not over yet, as we just said, but it looks like things are going his way for now, for the former Prime Minister Netanyahu. What type of reactions have you seen or heard from either Palestinian officials or Palestinians in general?
As you have mentioned, there were statements from Palestinian Prime Minister Mohammed Shtayyeh saying that the results of Israel's election show a rise in extremism and racism in the Israeli society, and said that we expect that there would be even more extremism in the Israeli society from which the Palestinian people have suffered for years. Also, Palestinian members of the Executive Committee of the Palestine Liberation Organization, they made it clearly saying that there is no doubt that the results of such a coalition will increase the hostile attitude towards the Palestinian people and make occupation measures even more extreme. At the end of the day, whether it would be Netanyahu or any other Israeli official, would be the next Israeli prime minister, the policies of the Israeli regime remain the same. the aggression against the Palestinian people remained the same. But now we are saying that the Palestinians have new Netanyahu, who's the longest, who's Israel's longest serving prime minister. So they know very well his policy. But this time it would be something even more aggressive. Because as a prime minister, Netanyahu, as Palestinians are saying, and experts, of course, Netanyahu's regime will likely press forward. The first thing, press forward with settlement activity on occupied land. And this is maybe the first thing he would do. Maybe he would also give a green light for widespread operations across the occupied West Bank to tell the Israeli society that he had done his utmost to curb what he sees as terrorism, and now he would do his utmost to fight Palestinian resistance that all the Israelis consider as terrorism.
So Elijah Magnier, obviously more of the same, but maybe because Netanyahu, if he gets elected, wants to prove himself, we might see more violations of Palestinian rights. Is that how you see it?
Thank you for having me. I think Netanyahu is going to be elected. The half marathon that he needs is to form the government. And because he is in coalition with the extremist Nazi right-wing religious Zionists, this is when he needs to give concessions to people like Itamar Ben-Gvir and his fellow in the other Zionist party. And I think this is a good blessing to the Palestinians, the 6 million Palestinians living between Gaza and the West Bank. It is time for them to understand that the white extremist Israeli government was replaced by another more extremist government. So nothing is going to change, but things are getting worse, and that will help the Palestinians to understand that there is no deal with the Israeli government, that the only way is to through armed struggle to recover the territory, because the Israelis have been lying to the Palestinians since the Oslo Agreement 1992-1993 after the Madrid conference. So by having Netanyahu in power and having someone like Ben-Gvir as a minister who want to strip the Arab from their nationality, I think this is very good. It will create a unity among the Palestinians and understand finally that there is no a good Israeli Zionist extremist and a bad Israeli very extremist, because they all at the end of the day are very extremist, and they will give no concession to the Palestinians whatsoever.
Mordechai Kandil, when are we supposed to find out for sure the results of this, and how long will it take for this?
Well, now we are speaking with almost 90% of the final vote counted. A right-wing bloc, of course, by Netanyahu, appears to have more decisive lead with 65 seats out of 120. Current Israeli Prime Minister Yair Lapid chances of holding on his coalition, of course, seem slim, as left-wing Meretz and Arab nationalist party Beled failed to pass the electoral threshold. It's the fifth election in 4 years, and now less than 18 months out of office, Netanyahu said that he would wait for the official results. We would expect the official results tomorrow, but at the end of the day, all the outcome from a number of Israeli media outlets and televisions have said so far that after 90% of the final vote counted, Netanyahu and his supporting, let's say, blocs have reached 65 seats out of 120 seats. This would give the Israeli president, he would, of course, ask Netanyahu to form the next Israeli cabinet.
Thank you. Elijah Magnier, journalist and political analyst from Brussels. Mordechai Kandil, thank you so much. Correspondent from Occupy Ramallah. And with that, we come to an end for this edition of the News Review.
Moving on, North Korea has once again fired multiple ballistic missiles in another show of force amid heightened tensions on the Korean Peninsula. According to South Korea's military, the North fired three ballistic missiles towards the east. They include a long-range missile fired from the capital Pyongyang and two short-range missiles fired north of Pyongyang. One of the missiles triggered an alert to residents in parts of central and northern Japan to seek shelter. The launches came a day after the North fired more than 20 missiles, the most in a single day. One of those missiles landed off South Korea's coast for the first time. The launches came after Pyongyang demanded the U.S. and the South to stop joint military exercises, saying such provocations can no longer be tolerated. Washington and Seoul say Pyongyang is about to resume testing of nuclear bombs for the first time since 2017, and that's why they are holding the drills. Pyongyang, however, views the drills as a rehearsal for an invasion. Russian President Vladimir Putin has warned that Moscow may leave the Ukraine grain deal again if Kiev violates its security guarantees.
Russia retains the right to leave these agreements if these guarantees from Ukraine are violated.
Putin said if Russia withdrew from the deal, it would continue to supply the entire grain delivered from Ukraine to the poorest countries free of charge. Putin's warning came after Russia resumed its participation in the UN-brokered Ukraine grain delivery deal earlier on Wednesday. Now, Moscow said it has received written security guarantees from Kiev to demilitarize the maritime corridor. Russia suspended the implementation of the deal on Saturday over a drone attack on its Black Sea fleet in Crimea. Russia blamed Ukraine for the attack, but Kiev dismissed Moscow's claim as a false pretext for suspending the deal. And that brings an end to our bulletin for this hour, but don't go away.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight. Claiming fraud in the 2020 presidential elections, former U.S. President Donald Trump provoked his extremist and far-right supporters to attack the Capitol Hill in order to prevent the confirmation of the winning candidate, Joe Biden. This act of Donald Trump and his supporters was recorded as a big scandal in the history of America's democracy. Now, on the eve of U.S. midterm elections, and considering Trump's possible intention to run for the 2024 presidential race, most Republicans believe that he should be tried and prosecuted for inciting extremists to attack Congress on 6th of January 2021. We have taken a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has more for us. Former U.S. Vice President Mike Pence writes in a forthcoming memoir, a post-election meeting at which advisers led by Rudy Giuliani attacked campaign lawyers and urged Donald Trump not to accept his election defeat, was a new low for a president well acquainted with rough and tumble of debates. Of the meeting in November of 2020, Mike Pence writes, "In the end, that day, the president made the fateful decision to put Giuliani and attorney Sidney Powell in charge of legal strategy. The seeds were being sown for a tragic day in January. By openly blaming Donald Trump for events leading to the 6th of January 2021 insurrection, when a pro-Trump mob attacked the U.S. Capitol in an attempt to overturn Joe Biden's election victory, Mike Pence risks angering Republicans he must court as he considers the next nomination for president." His memoir, So Help Me God, will be published on 15th of November. The website Axios published a short excerpt on Monday, 31st of October. Mike Pence writes, "What began as a briefing that Thursday afternoon quickly turned into a contentious back and forth between the campaign lawyers and a growing group of outside attorneys led by Rudy Giuliani and Sidney Powell, an attorney who had represented General Mike Flynn, Donald Trump's first national security advisor, who was fired for lying to the FBI. Mike Pence further writes, "After the campaign lawyers gave a sober and somewhat pessimistic report on the state of election challenges, the outside cast of characters went on the attack. Giuliani told the president over the speakerphone, 'Your lawyers are not telling you the truth, Mr. President,' adding, 'Even in an office well acquainted with rough and tumble of debates, it was a new low, and went downhill from there.' Donald Trump's culpability for the Capitol attack has been examined and presented by the House January 6 Committee, and is being investigated by the U.S. Justice Department. The former president is in legal jeopardy on other fronts as well. Election subversion, the unauthorized retention of White House papers after the end of his presidency, his business affairs, and a defamation lawsuit from a writer who alleges that he abused her. Donald Trump denies wrongdoing, claiming he remains dominant in opinion polls for 2024. He is reported to be seeking campaign hires while waiting until after the midterm elections next week to make a formal announcement. Mike Pence's presidential ambition is no secret either. But although the January 6 committee has presented him as a hero for refusing to cooperate with Trump's election subversion, he has work to do if he is to persuade Republican voters that he's the man to take on Joe Biden in 2024. The U.S. newspaper The Hill has more on the same story. U.S. Republican aides and strategists expect Attorney General Merrick Garland to pursue an indictment of former President Donald Trump within 60 to 90 days after Election Day, a move that probably would end the former president's attempts to run for president in 2024. Republican aides on Capitol Hill and veteran party strategists say Merrick Garland is under heavy pressure from Democrats to act, and the deadline for pursuing an indictment is fast approaching. One veteran Republican aide said, "A couple of weeks after the election, I assume that Garland will indict Donald Trump." A second Republican aide warned an indictment could actually end up helping the former president politically. They warned that the backlash will be stronger if Merrick Garland brings an indictment once Donald Trump's expected 2024 presidential campaign is up and running. There are actually two different investigatory probes that could lead to indictments of Donald Trump. One is related to the documents taken from the White House and found at his home in Mar-a-Lago, Florida, while the other concerns the January 6, 2021 attack on the Capitol. On 6th of January 2021, Donald Trump gave a provocative speech to his supporters, refusing to concede his election loss, and a crowd proceeded to march on to Capitol Hill, breaching the perimeter, attacking security guards, and sending lawmakers running for their safety. Following the final hearing of the congressional investigation into the riot on 6th of January, the Department of Justice has been urged to bring criminal charges against Donald Trump. The second Republican aide said the decision Merrick Garland has to make is really tough, warning that any prosecution would plunge the country, which is already so divided, into a potentially precarious situation. Republican aides and strategists warn there's a risk of political violence in response to any indictment against the former president. The website of CBS News has more for us. A former Donald Trump White House lawyer said he thinks there is a very high chance that the former President Donald Trump will face an indictment. Ty Cobb, who represented the White House during former Special Counsel Robert Mueller's investigation into Donald Trump's 2016 campaign contacts with Russia, said he believes the former president is likely to face legal consequences for actions related to the 6th of January 2021 attack on the Capitol and his attempts to overturn the 2020 presidential election. Ty Cobb said recently, "I think the president is in serious legal water, not so much because of the Mar-a-Lago search, but because of the obstructive activity he took in connection with the 6th of January proceeding and the attempts to interfere in the election count, particularly in Georgia, Arizona, Pennsylvania, and perhaps Michigan." According to an NBC News opinion poll, fewer U.S. Republicans than ever say they are loyal to former President Donald Trump. 33% of registered Republicans said they are a supporter of Donald Trump rather than the Republican Party, the lowest since NBC News began asking the question. The previous low was at 34% back in May of this year, while the highest was at 54% in October of 2020. 58% of those surveyed in September saw themselves as a supporter of the Republican Party rather than a supporter of Donald Trump, while 3% said that they are supporters of both Donald Trump and the Republican Party, and 4% said they support neither. The new numbers come amid concerns that Donald Trump's presence in the 2022 midterm elections, despite not being a candidate, could hurt the Republican Party in November and give Democrats a shot at keeping control of the U.S. Senate.
Food for thought.
Salam, everybody, and let us ponder on what the Prophet's 11th infallible heir, Imam Hassan Askari, peace upon him, has bequeathed to us of his wonderful sayings. Avoid begging people as long as you can endure, for every day has a new goodness. Insisting on asking others deprives one of his dignity, except when a door may be opened to you for a good entrance.
Thank you.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, the necessity of self-recognition. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome everyone. You're listening to A to Z program from the IRB English Radio. I'm your host, Hussein Hinzano. For a being that is by nature possessed of self-love, it is perfectly natural to engage in self-recognition and try to recognize the elements of his perfection and the means to reach it. As a result, understanding the necessity of self-recognition does not require complex rational or arbitrary reasons. For this reason, negligence towards this reality and absorption in matters which are by no means effective in leading man to perfection and prosperity is unnatural and leads to deviation. And the reason behind this matter must be sought and means of establishing soundness and salvation from it must be recognized. So principally, all human endeavors, be they scientific or practical, are carried out to provide the enjoyments, the interests, and benefits to a man. As a consequence, recognition of man himself is beginning his end, as well as the perfection which he might reach, which is also prior to any other issue. So without the recognition of man's reality and his true value, all other discussions and efforts will rather be futile and they will be baseless.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z program from the IRB English Radio. I'm your host, Hussein Hinzano. We are talking about self-recognition, the topic of today. Now, the insistence of heavenly religions or religious leaders and scholars of morals on self-recognition and self-awareness is entirely a guidance to this innate and rational truth. These particular bodies have insisted so much about self-awareness and self-guidance that we need to take a look at it and see what it can lead us to, how it can improve our habit and our action towards self-recognition. The Holy Quran regards forsaking the soul as the requisite for forsaking Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. and as the punishment of this sin. The Quran is saying, and be not like those who forsook Allah, so He made them forsake their own souls. The Holy Quran has reproached those who do not endeavor for self-awareness and who do not see divine signs within themselves. The Holy Prophet ﷺ has also maintained an exceptional significance for self-recognition, and he has introduced it as the means of theism by saying, whoever recognizes himself has recognized his Lord. By recognizing yourself means that you know much about your God. It means that you have recognized your Lord. In this regard, numerous traditions with various contexts have been related from the Amir al-Mu'mineen also talking about self-recognition. It is reported from him saying that self-recognition is the most beneficial of all recognition. The Imam has also been reported saying, the more the man gains knowledge, the more he endeavors for himself and strives in the way of being educated and reformed. We need to work on our own self and make sure that we build the habit of self-recognition and self-awareness, because by doing so means that we are opening the gates for us to understand Allah more, for us to understand the path that we are supposed to take as Muslims, and the right path that takes us much closer and takes us towards Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Thank you so much for listening to this show. Until next episode, inshallah, fi amanillah. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
News, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With the light.
Thousands of baby turtles have been released into Peru's Amazon basin in an attempt to preserve the rainforest ecosystem. More than 6,000 hatchlings of three endangered species of turtles have been released into lakes and lagoons in Peru to help them repopulate. To make this happen, wildlife officials collected the eggs from their natural habitat and transferred them to artificial beaches until they hatched. The river turtles are considered vulnerable because for many years they have been killed for human consumption or kept as pets. Scientists are currently trying to conserve the Amazon to avoid catastrophic climate change, and Peru has the second largest share of the rainforest after Brazil. Another world record news. This time it has been set in Switzerland. A Swiss railway company has run the world's longest passenger train with a trip on one of the most spectacular tracks through the Alps. To celebrate its 175th anniversary, Switzerland's rail industry launched the world's longest ever passenger train, measuring around 2 kilometers. The electric train took almost an hour to cover around 25 kilometers over the UNESCO World Heritage Albula line in eastern Switzerland. The Albula line is famous for its endless swooping curves and steep descents. Rail enthusiasts lined the valley to watch the train's 100 cars snake through the Alps. Belgium and the Netherlands were the previous record holders for the world's longest passenger train. They used standard railway through the flat landscapes.
If you enjoy street art, then you'll probably like Iztapalapa district in Mexico's capital city. Nearly 300 neighborhoods in this area are beautifully painted with brightly colored murals for all to enjoy. Visitors can also ride a cable car and take a tour of the art from above. The district is home to nearly 7,000 murals and graffiti painted on all sorts of surfaces, including rooftops. Iztapalapa Murals is a project that was promoted by the Mexico City's mayor in 2018. The goal of the project was to recover and dignify public spaces through art and involve neighbors in its creation and conservation. Iztapalapa is one of the poorest municipalities in the capital, and the initiative aims to reduce neighborhood violence through public lighting of the murals during the night.
It is never too late to learn a new skill. That's what 100-year-old Nada Rudan has shown with her art when she discovered her love for painting at the age of 87. The Bosnian native says she started to paint to keep herself busy, and now she finds the days are often too short to fit in everything she wanted to do. The artist paints for 3 hours in the morning and 2 hours in the afternoon without glasses. Rudan marked her 100th birthday with an exhibition of all the works that she has painted over the years.
My 100th birthday, I've celebrated it at sea. That was really a big event for me. Before that, I had an exhibition that I didn't hope for. But my children persuaded me. I was against it. I'm not an artist. I said, children, don't embarrass me.
She says she's inspired by nature and her travel around the globe. Rudan has lived in numerous areas such as Central America, Hawaii Islands, Europe, and the Asian Himalayas, among many other places. The artist survived both World War II and the siege of Sarajevo by Bosnian Serb forces. Iran's Kish Island is known as the paradise of the Persian Gulf. Our correspondent Yusuf Jalali has been to the stunning southern Iranian resort island and has filed this report about its beautiful attractions.
It's no land at the heart of a scorching but amazing island. This snow town is one of the latest entertainment centers in Iran's Kish Island in the Persian Gulf. Every year, some 2 million visitors from inside and outside Iran visit the island to enjoy its attractions, from its entertainment centers to its stunning beach.
The beach and the pier in Kish are really peaceful and tranquilizing. It's the third time I'm visiting the island, and I went parasailing, water skiing, and I'm planning to go scuba diving.
Kish Island offers all kinds of sea entertainment activities, from scuba diving to sailing, and oh yes, flyboarding. Besides sea sports, visitors can enjoy its amusement parks and a range of leisure activities inside the island. And if you're a tireless window shopper, Kish is a land of malls and shopping centers.
Kish is an amazing island. It used to be an abandoned island some 3 decades ago, but today it is a luxurious tourist resort with modern buildings and exciting recreational places.
Despite all the pleasure one can have in Kish, the island still has many shortcomings. The major issue annoying visitors is the poor accommodation services.
Hotel facilities and services are a bit weak given the large number of tourists that visit this island. They need to pay more attention to the accommodation infrastructure.
Just a few hundred kilometers away from Kish, there's a tourist magnet in the United Arab Emirates, Dubai, which absorbs the chunk of foreign tourists. While U.S. sanctions on Iran are a major factor to blame for Kish lagging behind in its rivalry with Dubai, the island's officials believe it still has a chance to win the game of tourism against Dubai.
If we want to excel, it is not going to be a tough job. We need to work on two major areas. The first is the infrastructure, and the second is regulations that would allow tourists or investors to easily come to Kish to entertain themselves or do business.
Situated off the southern coast of Iran in the Persian Gulf, Kish is one of Iran's free trade zones. Foreign travelers do not need a visa to visit the island, as travel permits are issued on arrival by Kish officials and are valid for up to 14 days.
With its mesmerizing nature and eye-catching urban landscapes, Kish has earned the title of the Bride of the Persian Gulf. Its authorities say the island is already a hub for Iranian travelers, but they say they seek to turn it into a regional tourist magnet. Yusuf Jalali from Kish Island.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
A 78-year-old artist is making a comeback with a unique art installation on Governor's Island in the United States of America. One of its biggest features is the sound and creaking of moving chains.
It's a project that I proposed for a commission in St. Louis. The site of the commission was the area near the Mississippi River and the St. Louis courthouse. So I wanted to do a piece that addressed those areas and the subjects. And and of course we have in those areas the Mississippi River, which is a place that you talk about the history of American commerce, but also we can talk about the history of slavery.
Charles Gaines wanted to highlight the role slavery played in building the economy of the United States. That's why he purposely used chains, and the sculptor pointedly faces the Statue of Liberty in New York City. The installation is roughly 30 meters long and activated by colossal chains that rotate on anchors. The installation is part of a three-chapter series called The American Manifest, Moving Chains. It will be kept for all to see until the summer of next year.
A Palestinian farmer has discovered an ancient Byzantine-era mosaic when preparing to plant an olive tree on his plot of land in the Gaza Strip. The farmer and his son have been carefully excavating the area for 3 months since spring. The pair dug out 3 patches, revealing glimpses of an ornate mosaic with intricate images of birds, flora, and tile patterns. Its full size is roughly 23 square meters. The discovery has set off excitement amongst archaeologists. Experts say it is one of the most well-preserved specimens, with precision in graphics and richness in colors. According to archaeologists, the mosaic pavement dates back to the 5th and 7th centuries. Last month, another Palestinian farmer found the rare stone sculpture while working on his land, which dates back to around 2500 BC.
If you have a sweet tooth, then this next bit of news is just for you. Visitors are now taking advantage of the expanded version of Cakeland, which is an immersive art gallery in the U.S. city of Los Angeles. The structure is meant to feel like a giant multi-layered cake. It's entirely made of artificial materials, but looks like if it's full of cherries, whipped cream, and layers of cake. Artist Scott Hoff says he used nearly a ton of pipe frosting, 120 mirrors, and thousands of cherries. Plus, he embedded thousands of crystals in the walls as a final touch. The artist says he chose to develop Cakeland after he noticed how much his artificial cake sculptures were welcomed by viewers.
So I chose cake because, number one, it's really beautiful. Number two, it's really fun to do. And number three, it engages the viewers in such a meaningful way.
Hoff says he never actually made a real cake before and has mainly followed his enthusiasm for fake food as the inspiration for this project. Visitors are able to walk through the cake, a labyrinth, and explore various rooms. While there is a lot of deliciousness and lightness of the cakes, visitors to this cake land can discover some interesting darker elements as they wander around. The art installation has continued to expand since it was founded by Hov in 2020. Robots are slowly but surely becoming part of everyday life, taking on human roles in different areas. Now, fast food restaurants can make French fries faster and better as a robot called Flippy 2 takes over the job.
When an order comes in through the restaurant system, it automatically spits out its instructions to Flippy. It takes a frozen product, fries it for the precise amount of time, and puts the finished product in the end. It does it faster, more accurately, more reliably, and happier than most humans do it.
Flippy 2 has been created in a robotic lab in California called MISO after 5 years of efforts by its developers. According to the project engineers, a really good understanding of the food science is needed to make sure the food quality is there, how different food sticks together, and how the temperature and heat affect it. The MISO CEO says the machine can cook several meals with different recipes simultaneously, removing the need for catering staff.
This technology utilizes a whole bunch of computer vision. There's cameras throughout the system, including right here we have these food identification cameras. The cameras not only guide the robot and tell it exactly where it is in space and how to move through this area, but also identifies the food type and it knows the recipe for each one.
The MISO CEO says tasks like the fry station are the kind that humans are most happy to offload. The name Flippy comes from the original machine designed to flip burgers, which was not very useful for restaurants.
Freedom is an essential virtue that is valued not only by humans but animals as well, just like two eagle owls that have been released into the wild after being born in a Madrid zoo. The two owl twins were freed after months of training to survive in the nature. First, they were taken to a big aviary to develop the necessary skills, including those for hunting prey. The aviary is designed to have a similar environment to the local mountain range. Meantime, they need to gain muscle and come to a suitable weight. After passing various skill tests, the owls are released as part of Madrid Zoo's breeding program of night birds of prey. 7 eagle owls and 11 barn owls have been released since the program was launched in 2017. However, some of them flew back seeking shelter as they failed to adapt to the nature.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Now some countries and some international cooperation platforms have begun to coordinate attempts to de-dollarization, such as BRICS. In the context of the weakening U.S. dollar hegemony, developing countries all over the world need a more stable type of financial mechanism as a new channel for conducting financial transactions. The BRICS and other international platforms are trying to work out solutions. In this regard, we have taken a look at some world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. RT in a report wrote, the two nations have been promoting settlements in national currencies, referring to Russia and China. The transition to trade in national currencies between Russia and China will contribute to a global de-dollarization process. China's charge d'affaires in Russia said this week at a conference on Russian-Chinese relations. Sun Weidong said, noting that bilateral trade has risen dramatically, mostly on energy and agricultural supplies, the existing economic partnership between China and Russia and the long-term accumulated level of trade have laid a solid foundation for further deepening cooperation between our countries. Energy cooperation continues to play an important role in relations between the two countries. In addition, agricultural products and seafood from Russia are increasingly entering the Chinese market, the diplomat said, adding, "We have cooperation on major projects in the field of nuclear energy, aircraft construction, rocket engines, satellite navigation. In addition, payments are constantly being made in local currencies." Russia and its trading partners have been expanding the share of national currencies in mutual settlements in an attempt to move away from the US dollar and the euro. In recent years, Moscow has been steadily following a policy of de-dollarization of foreign trade, particularly expanding the use of Chinese currency for buying financial products denominated in yuan and using it as a reserve currency. Trade between the two nations hit $136 billion in the first 9 months of this year, jumping by over 30% in annual terms, according to the National Bureau of Statistics of China. Moscow and Beijing aim to increase bilateral trade to a $200 billion target this year. In this regard, Global Times wrote, Egypt will develop a new currency indicator partly to reframe the idea that the Egyptian pound should be pegged to the US dollar, the country's central bank governor said, according to Reuters. As a strong dollar has become a hazard for global economy, economies around the world have realized the urgency of de-dollarization. Many countries have started their own exploration according to their national condition to tackle the impact caused by the U.S. highly reckless and irresponsible financial policy. The new currency indicator of Egypt is a helpful trial among countries aiming for de-dollarization. In order to tackle the spillover impacts from the U.S. tightened monetary policy on other countries, many countries across the world have started their de-dollarization exploration in ways including using bilateral and multilateral currency agreements to settle transactions in international trade, promoting the diversification of foreign exchange reserves, and reducing U.S. Treasury holdings. De-dollarization is not a voluntary choice made by countries such as Egypt, but a forced response to the weaponization of the dollar. The strong U.S. dollar policy exacerbating serious inflation, currency devaluation, and capital outflow in developing countries. To avoid being dragged into a crisis, de-dollarization has become an increasing priority for those nations. Admittedly, it is not an easy task to avoid being pulled into a financial crisis caused by the dollar. There still remain uncertainties in their efforts to cope with current financial problems. They still face mounting challenges in how to maintain financial market and foreign trade stability and take proper measures and steps to avert a crisis. Ending dollar hegemony in the world is not an easy goal, but the process has already